I think that all of the animals that are talked about, or that have had a prominent place in the stories, and really, say for example, the buffalo, that it has a very prominent place in the story as far as the Sundance goes. And the animals that are talked about or that are referred to in these stories are probably all animals that we know of that we recognize. And the buffalo itself has a lot of significance and has a lot of importance within our tribe. Other tribes, the white buffalo, you know, had a really important role in their spiritual beliefs as well. But within the Shoshone tribe and within our family line, even, you know, it was very important. And what was really interesting about this was that in growing up, we were really fortunate to have our great-grandfather with us as long as we did, because he, you know, I was already old enough to really understand and be interested. You know, when you're a teenager, when you're a younger child, a lot of times you're not interested in spirituality or things. And I was really lucky because my mom had told me that ever since I was really small that I always had this inclination toward spiritual things, and that I always had a lot of faith, and that I always wanted to pray, and I always remember feeling that and thinking that everybody had that, you know, and come to find out not everybody does. So when I got older, even as a teenager when I was in high school, I remember I used to go and see my Grandpa John all the time. He was pretty old already. He died in 1985 at 113. You know, we were really blessed to have him that long, because there was a lot of knowledge that needed to be passed, and a lot of teachings that needed to be passed to us, and that's probably why he stayed so long. But he had told us the story about the way that the Sundance had come to the Shoshone people. And, you know, just growing up, we had always heard the story, and it's repeated many times, so that, because it's an oral culture, that those stories need to be repeated many times to make sure that they're told the correct way, generation after generation. And so we had heard the story many times before, and I remember sitting down with one of our elders who's still alive today. He's in his 90s. I know that he was in World War II, and he had been a prisoner of war. His name is Star Weed. And I was talking to him one time about the Sundance, and he told me this story, and it was the same story that, you know, we had always been told about Yellow Hand, Oha Magoya. It was good to hear the same story being told by another family, because of course we're going to know that all the people within our family, in this family line, we're all going to have that same story. But then there was this other, not even related to us, not related to that side of the family anyway, you know, the same story, just completely different family line. And the way that he had started out that story was that he was talking about when he was a young man that he knew this man named Quentin Quay. And Quentin Quay was a really important person within tribal history. And he said that Quentin Quay was an old man when he was young. And he said that he used to go and visit with him. And he had talked about being down in this area close to the hot springs where the mineral water comes up and it's hot. And there's this place that we call it the hot springs. And he said they were there, close to there, and visiting. He was visiting him, and he said this old man was cooking boiled fish. And he invited him to eat with him, and he said, and as we were eating, he said this old man was talking about this story. And Star, we told me the same story, exactly the same way. He said this man, his name was Yellow Hand, and see, he said that Quentin Quay knew Yellow Hand, that Quentin Quay was a young man when Yellow Hand was an old man, and that he knew him personally. And now this was an old man, Quentin Quay, telling this young man, Star Weed. And then I was talking to Star Weed, who was an old man.
Yes.
And so it kind of came through a whole different line, rather than from generation to generation, the story was being told on within our family. But what he had said was that this man, Yellowhand, was considered a scout for the tribe. And so he would be, a lot of times he would be out like a couple of days away from the tribe. And, you know, if they saw an enemy coming from that direction, then they would send a signal to the main tribe to warn them so that they could be prepared. And he said that this Yellowhand was up on a bluff. And at this particular time, he was fasting and praying, and he said that he could see something dark far away, and he couldn't tell what it was. It was just this dark spot, and he said as it came closer, he could see that it was a buffalo, and this buffalo got to the bottom of this bluff where he was at, and he said it was, you know, hitting the dirt, and it was using its hoofs to hit the dirt and like throwing the dirt up on itself. And he was watching him, and then this buffalo started coming up toward where he was at, and he could hear singing. And as the buffalo got closer, he could tell that the singing was coming from the buffalo. And as he approached him, he told him not to be afraid. He said, "I'm sent to you by the Creator, and I'm bringing to you a very sacred ceremony that's going to help your people." And he taught him how the lodge was to be erected. He taught him the meaning and the purpose of everything in there, the way that the lodge is set up, and why it should be set up. And each of the poles have a different meaning. Everything in there has a meaning and represents a different part of the universe. Mm-hmm. And he taught him about how the ceremony was to be run and what they were supposed to do, the purpose and the meaning of all of it, the songs that go with it, and that these things shouldn't be changed. And so the buffalo instructed Yellowhand about all of these things. And Yellowhand had gone back to the people, and he told them that, you know, that the buffalo had brought him this way, and that it was from the Creator. And they had the first Sundance, and there were just four men that had gone in. During that time that they had that ceremony, it was during a time of drought. And so the Shoshone were having a really hard time because they weren't able to get the food that they needed, you know, not only the plants and the roots that they depended on, but also the meat because of the grass and, you know, the scarcity of the animals. And so it was a really tough time. They were having a hard time. And Yellowhand brought the ceremony back. They had the ceremony. And just right after the ceremony was completed, then they were led to buffalo. And to them, you know, the Shoshone really viewed this as a blessing and an answer to their prayers. Mm-hmm. And all the other tribes heard about what had happened because of the ceremony. And so the Sundance spread to these other tribes. You know, they all wanted to know. They wanted to learn about the ceremony because of the good that it brought to mm-hmm. the Shoshone because of it. So it spread from there. And, you know, Star had told me that story, and I was listening to it, and it matched exactly from the way it had been told in our family, because this Yellowhand, he had a son named Posse, you know, like I explained to you.
Yes.
And Posse ran the Sundance after him, mm-hmm. and he continued to take care of the medicine bundle. Posse had two sons that were responsible for running the ceremony. Wuwuchi and Andrew Brazil. Mm-hmm. And then after them, my grandpa John Trujillo ran the Sundance and that ceremony. And after my grandpa John ran the ceremony and the Sundance, then that responsibility went to me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the same story was told to each generation about the way that the Sundance came to our people. Mm-hmm. And you know, and how important it was for us to make sure, you know, that we sing those songs the way that we're supposed to. When you first go into the lodge, the night that you go in to the lodge, all the men stand in a line, two lines behind the lodge, and they circle around the lodge one time, and then they come back around again. The second time they come to the doorway, then they go into the lodge, and the whole time that they're blowing the eagle bone whistles mm-hmm. as they're circling the lodge, and then they enter into the lodge. And when they come in to the lodge, all the men, you know, then will sit down on the ground. And those four songs that that buffalo was singing when he first came to Oamakwaya, those four songs are sung. And they don't have a drum or anything, they're just sung, just mm-hmm. your voice. After those four songs are sung, then the prayer song is sung. The singers sing that. Mm-hmm. They're sitting around a drum, and they're hitting the drum. And so, and that's really powerful. You can feel the vibration of the drum mm-hmm. As they're singing. And they sing that prayer song. And they'll sing, you know, the other sacred songs throughout the night. And then the next morning at sunrise, then a sunrise song is sung before the sun comes over the horizon. And then we're facing the sun with our eagle bone whistles. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we bless ourselves with that power and that medicine that comes through the sun. The song is sung until the sun is completely up. And then we sing those four songs again without the drum. And then we offer a prayer. And then all of the dancers will come up and cedar and bless themselves. And then the people that come to the sunrise ceremony are allowed then to come in and also cedar. But it's a real powerful way to pray. We're very grateful that the Creator blessed our people with this way. And it's not an easy way to pray. It's really hard. And it takes a lot of commitment and sacrifice. The buffalo has a very significant role regarding the sundance. There are a lot of different animals that also have really important positions in the Sundance Lodge. The center pole is kind of the symbolism of that is the center pole itself is connected to the outside circle by the rafters that go from, there's 12 forks that stand on the outside. All of the rafters go from those forks to the center pole, through the center pole. And then there are rafter poles then that sit and make that circle on the outside complete. And that's kind of the representation of the physical world. And then we have the inner circle that connects all of our medicine fathers, and the sun dancers are in a sacred realm. They're not part of the outside world anymore because of the fasting having gone without food or water, and they entered into the sacred realm. Mm. And they're a part of that with our medicine fathers. But then there's that sacred world of the Creator that is represented through that center pole. Mm-hmm. And so all of those three worlds are connected there within the lodge itself through that. And because of the faith of all of those that are there that are praying, power of our prayers coming up through the center pole to the Creator, and then His blessings coming down through the center pole to all of the dancers there within that circle, all of the singers, all of the people there are praying at the lodge. Mm-hmm. All of those that are camped, you know, they set up their teepees and their camps are surround the lodge itself. And all those people that are at the campground are blessed. And then those blessings then go out to all of our people, mm-hmm. wherever they might be, and then to other tribes and to the rest of the world. And so that time when those prayers are being offered to that center pole and that power of the Creator is coming down through the center pole, then that is the center of the universe, and those blessings, you know, are coming and benefiting the whole world. So, you know, it's really a powerful ceremony, but because of the sacredness of that center pole, you know, the buffalo hangs on that center pole mm-hmm. and faces to the west, and then the eagle and the sacredness and what it represents is on the chief's pole that goes through, it's the first pole that goes through the center pole. It's like the backbone of the mm-hmm. the lodge. And the eagle sits, it's the only rafter that has a fork on the end. It's a pine tree, that a long lodgepole pine, and the eagle sits in the middle of that fork and faces to the east. And we're taught, you know, that power and that medicine comes because the lodge is aligned exactly. The center of the doorway is aligned with where the sun comes up over the horizon, where the center pole is. And where the chief's pole is all in a direct line with that. And then the chief's teepee and the camp is set back also in a straight line with those. And that corridor is where the power and the medicine comes through. Our Sundance is usually the fourth weekend in August, but it doesn't always have to be, you know, but that's, you know, we've kind of just set it at a set time so that people will always know that that's the time that we're going to be praying. Most of the Sundances take place during the summer, and there's a lot of other Sundances going on at the same time on different reservations. Well, not too many on that same weekend as ours, but throughout the summer. So they're all praying, you know, also. There's a lot of good blessings that have come to our people through this way of praying. It's been a really good way for us to get the help that we need, and also to be able to get close to Him, to be able to understand Him, and to be able to learn and to become more like Him. And that was a good question about, you know, the animals. And there's a difference between, you know, because our culture is an oral culture, there are a lot of stories that are told that contain history. And a lot of those, you know, like I said, when it comes to the Sundance, are retold during those ceremonies. But then there's other stories, too, that were considered like wintertime stories, is kind of how they were referred to, because that was a time where people came in earlier, especially there in, you know, in Wyoming, and it's colder and the sun goes down earlier. And they were told by the storytellers, designated storytellers within the tribe, and they would tell these stories that a lot of times those kinds of stories had the kinds of things that you were talking about, you know, things that maybe animals that we don't know of, that are kind of stories that weren't necessarily containing the history of the tribe in that way, but their purpose more was not just entertainment either, because they needed to capture the imagination of the young people, or all the people that were listening. But they also had ways of being able to teach people how to conduct themselves, you know, and what qualities were good, what weren't good, what bad things could happen to you if you were to do bad things. And a lot of times, a lot of those stories contain the coyote stories, you know, where the wolf was a being that had a lot of good qualities, noble, a noble character, and told the truth, and, you know, made good decisions, wise decisions, and was brave. And whereas the coyote was his brother, but he was the opposite. And he was lazy. He would steal. He would lie. He would cheat. Always try to take shortcuts. And he emulated all of the bad things. And so those stories would always show the consequence of his bad actions. And so, you know, through those stories, you know, then children, and anybody listening, like I said, anybody listening to those stories then would be taught, those are the kinds of things you don't want. You don't want to be a liar. You don't want to be lazy. You don't want to try to take shortcuts. You don't want to cheat. Because if you do, then these are the kinds of things that are going to happen, just like what happened to the coyote. You're going to be in the same boat. So you don't want to be like that. And so those stories are different, you know, because there's a purpose for them to teach good things, but they contain things that might not be, that really happened, whereas the others contain our history. And so sometimes people get things mixed up, you know, and they think, well, these people are telling this, not a fairy tale, but a myth or a legend. They're telling this as if it were history, you know. So we need to keep those two separate, and, you know, we, and our people need to make sure that they remember the remember that too. And I think that, you know, a lot of people, I've noticed that because of that same concern that you're talking about, will discredit anything spiritual. You know, whether, I mean, it's good spirits or bad spirits, you know, because there are both. And because of that, then they don't think that those things even exist, which, you know, is too bad for them, because if they understood these ways, they'd be able to deal with them in a better way. But one of the things that we're taught and that we're told is that there was a time where our people were so in tune with the Creator and so close to Him that we were able to communicate with the animals. We were able to understand them, they could understand us. That there was a time in our history that our spirituality was so strong that we could do that. You know, and that there were a lot of men, it wasn't just one man in each tribe that was a spiritual leader, spiritual healer. Everybody had that power and that ability because we were so spiritual. And, you know, that they talk about that time that our people were that spiritually in tune with the Creator, that where we could communicate on a regular basis with everything. But we've gotten so far away from that. And that's one of the reasons why I think a lot of people will rely only on a certain few to be, you know, to be the leaders. And,
yeah.
You know, and that's one of the things I wanted to make clear, is that within this, you know, even within the title, you know, I don't ever expect anybody to call me chief or anything like that. I don't feel like I need a title. And so, you know, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with that. But the position that I have within the Sundance is the Sundance. The title of that is Sundance Chief. Mm-hmm. And that's something that our people understand and they know, and they've always called it that, just the Sundance Chief. Mm-hmm. And that's the title that's the position that I hold. That's the responsibility that I have within the ceremony as the Sundance Chief. But I have never expected and feel really uncomfortable when, because of that position, then people will call me Chief James or Chief Trosper or whatever, because I don't feel that way, you know, at all. You know, I know that that's the title that our people refer to that position as, but I don't feel like I need to be called that. It's really a good, you know, the responsibility that comes along with that position is good. You know, but it's never a position where anybody should ever feel like they need any kind of recognition, because that's not the purpose at all. You know, and if I ever got to a place where I was doing it for those reasons, then it would be wrong. You know, and it's not good. And the way that I see that position is that it's not a position for other people to hold you in high esteem. You're in a position to be a servant to everybody else. And I work harder than everybody else when it comes to the Sundance. They don't even know how much I've gone through in the preparation, you know, in the worrying and all of the things that I have to do to make sure that everything goes well with the Sundance, and way in advance. And then when things don't go good, nobody looks at anybody else and says, yes. Oh, that was wrong because of them. It all the blame comes on me. It's all on my shoulders. And so, you know, I view that as, you know, that position not as a position to be held higher than anybody or I should be treated special. I'm in a position to be a servant to everybody. I do everything I can, you know, to make sure that even just the grounds are prepared, that things are done. You know, so that our dancers can come there and they can be focused on their prayers and not be so worried about whether or not they're stepping in holes or whether or not they're stepping on an alfalfa stalk. You know, they're really sharp. They could cut your feet. Those, even small things like that, I try to make sure that if I have to do it myself, I will. Hopefully somebody will come and say, what can we do to help? And I can say, well, that's one thing that I haven't gotten done yet. Can you cut those out of the ground? Or there's this hole here because we dug this rock out. Can you fill it with dirt? You know, those are the kinds of things. But I'm there to be a servant to make sure everything goes good for everybody.